Good morning. Today is Tuesday, January the 23rd. Tuesday. Did I say Thursday or Tuesday?
You said Tuesday.
Oh, well, I scribbled down Thursday. Thursday, January the 23rd. Joining us this morning, Susan Rottwein. Good morning, lady.
Good morning.
We have our little tradition of why do we say that? Are you ready?
I'm ready.
To be initiated into the program. Okay, here we go. Make no bones. How did the expression make no bones about it come to mean frank speech?
Now there's a stumper. Here it is, right away. I'm already stumped.
That's
right?
All right.
Take it. Take
That's
a guess right. at it. Yeah. Something about bodies and bones. I'm not sure.
Ah, well, here we go. There's a connection here. The early meaning of this expression was to let things pass. A guest finding a bone in his fish soup or chowder would, for politeness' sake, make no mention of the bones. Then the phrase began to be used in a satiric sense to mean just the opposite. Now the original meaning has almost been forgotten.
Excellent and very apropos, right?
Yeah, I see. Exoskeleton, bones. I mean, it's kind of all the same thing. Susan's kind of the local ace right now in the crabbing industry about current conditions, things that are going on locally as well as through the regulatory folks. So kind of give a base reference. For some of us, crabbing is crabbing, and we know it's sometime around December 1st is when discussions start and tests are made, and that's kind of when it all starts if we go back 20 years or so. How has that changed?
Well, excellent question, Brian. How has it all changed? Well, I'm going to go back a little bit further than 20 years, and I'm going to take you back to the late 1800s and the beginning of commercial crab fishing in California. Began around 1892 or so. And typically down in the Bay Area, it begins on November 15th. And that's very familiar for folks for the Thanksgiving and Christmas holiday. Up here in California, in Northern California, begins on December 1st. And as you kind of alluded to, there aren't too many years in the past, I'd say 10 years, that we've actually gone on time.
So why the difference between the two? Because I think a lot of folks are familiar. Well, back when Lazio's was around, and you would see things that you don't see now. And the fact that the Bay Area does get it in the middle of November, is it just that they're higher on the pecking order, or is there a reason for that?
I think there's probably a combination of things. The one that I'll speak directly to is that it's basically a Thanksgiving market, and it's a tradition down in the Bay Area that folks want crab for Thanksgiving. Not so much up in this area. It is a tradition, but typically that's the reason that they go first.
So that zone goes first, and then right around December 1st, historically, we've heard that's when the labor negotiations start.
Well, probably just a little bit before that, because there's so many moving parts for opening the season. And the moving parts are looking like, number one you think about is weather. The actual fullness of the crab, or what we call meat recovery, we want them to be nice and fat and full. And by regulation, they need to be, I believe it's 24.5% now. It may have dropped to 23 this year, 23.5.
And that's a reference to if you open up one of the leg sections, it's
how much
a
meat
quarter
is,
full?
Yeah, well, yes, at least, at a minimum.
Okay.
So you have your fullness or your recovery, you have your weather, and then, of course, you have your price negotiation. And one of the things that's been thrown in the mix over the last 5-6 years is domoic acid.
Yeah, now where did that come from?
That's an interesting one, Brian. Domoic acid actually probably goes back millennia, but we've recently started tracking it. And I'll take that back a little bit to Alfred Hitchcock and the Birds, if everybody remembers that.
Not the Mel Brooks version.
Not the Mel Brooks
version.
The real deal. Alfred Hitchcock lived around Santa Cruz area, and he made the observation back in the 50s that the birds were going crazy. And that's what the actual movie, book, etc., The Birds, was based on, is birds going absolutely crazy, attacking various things. And actually, it gets traced back to domoic acid. The birds were eating anchovies that were high in domoic acid and made the birds a little goofy. So even though we may not have started tracking it till recently, it's something that's basically, in a nutshell, it's an algal bloom that occurs. And the crabs being bottom feeders are subject to eating clams and things that are higher in those domoic acid.
So it's not just crustacean.
No.
And it's not just the crabs. It's just kind of, well, like what we see in the rivers with the high nitrogen content.
Exactly.
You just see the bloom and it's affects everything.
And it enters the food chain and then it's all over the place. It affects marine mammals, it affects fish, it affects crab, mussels, clams, all of it.
Is there a clean delineation of how much is too much or how little is acceptable?
The Food and Drug Administration, federal and state, have established guidelines because domoic acid is a neurotoxin, and particularly in crab, you're really talking about the viscera or the organs. So you're not talking about the meat specifically. The levels have to be extremely high, but they have established levels that are safe. And if the crab exceed those levels, they do something called an evisceration order, which means they need to be backed and cleaned prior to cooking.
Which is standard for some and not standard for others.
Exactly.
Yeah, yeah. So the preparation part of the process. Now, with pork, there's trichinosis. Okay, cook it to a certain level and you're okay. Is there, at some point, a level where the domoic acid becomes neutralized?
No.
Or it just is if it's there and you
just... It's there or it's not.
So how does it get out of the organism? How does it get out of a crab to make things okay?
Basically, the algal bloom passes and whatever the crustacean, the marine mammal, whatever it is that's feeding on it, the bird, the levels will decrease. It's kind of like... I'm trying to think what I...
Well, kind of like alcohol?
Yeah.
You have a certain level and then it processes through?
Yep, that's an excellent way of looking at it.
How long does it take?
That's a darn good question. I don't have a darn good answer.
Okay. Yeah. Well, I think, you know, they shed the shell on a somewhat regular scheduled basis, and then they've also got the other elements as they grow and whatnot. I just didn't know if there was a timeline. So if it's at a 20% too high today, well, in about a week, it should be processed through.
Actually,
like
I can't give you the actual scientific number, but within, generally you see the levels dropping as the feed drops off and the levels of the algal bloom drop off. You can see it decrease over a period of a couple of weeks or a month, because that's what we test for at the beginning of the season.
It's 8:19.
Listen to 980 AM for the best music, ABBA, Neil Diamond, Barbra Streisand, Billy Joel, and The Fifth Dimension. The all-time best are heard every day, all day long on 980 AM. We are easy radio, easy on your ears and easy on your mind. This is memory-making music and you'll love the memories you create. Tune in and hear the best music, easy.
Good morning, KINS, News and Information Time. It's 8:24. We're back talking shop this morning with Susan Rotwein. Crab season itself, Susan, is something that's a little bit interesting. I mean, you had mentioned during the break, I think it was at the end with the domoic acid, that, which probably for me is more demonic acid, but we'll go with domoic. That it really does influence when the season is, and sometimes it's not much of an issue, and sometimes it's a more significant issue. Is it the offshore currents, you know, whether it's a El Nino, El Nino, the Alaskan current? I mean, those are kind of the things that we hear more about in generic broad strokes. Are those the things that influence this element?
Absolutely, Brian. Ocean temperatures influence it, as well as runoff. So things that may have been influential over the past years may have been agricultural runoff up in this area. That could definitely be involved in an algal bloom. What we're experiencing now.
So it can be that. I mean, when you say the ag stuff, let's use the ag, the marijuana stuff, and let's use the Eel River as a reference, because I think everybody's familiar with the furry water.
Mm-hmm.
Okay. So then it comes out of the mouth.
Mm-hmm.
It's in high enough concentration to be able to spread through a large area, or is this a small pocket that would be affected?
I think it's all true, Brian, and I think that what you're looking at is an effect that occurs as a result of a number of different variables. So increased runoff from ag, and that combined with warmer water temperatures. So you get all those things together. It's not just any one thing. It's like a cup getting filled up. And you get to a certain point, and boom, you get the algal bloom. So it can be fairly isolated. This year, there was a little bit of a pocket just north of Bodega Bay. There was a little bit around Fort Bragg at USAW, enough that caused a little bit of consternation. But immediately within second, third test, everything was clear.
So it registered.
But dissipated as well, because we're seeing cooling temperatures now and some upwelling along the coast.
What, I mean, this is, I know, a real hanging curveball going into the sports season, right? Okay. what is it that crab eat?
Everything.
Because you were saying, you know, the below the 25% roughly, or big, these things grow fairly quickly. I mean, you see some pictures, it kind of looks like an outbreak going on, or something ought to be in a petri dish. What do these things eat? And do Dungeness eat things different than like the king crabs also? Or are crabs crabs?
I can't speak to king crab, but I would make the quantum leap that they're bottom feeders as well, and that's what Dungeness crab are. They're bottom feeders, about 4 years to a marketable crab. In terms of the size that we harvest only males. We don't harvest females.
Do they look the same?
Nope. Flip them over, you can tell the difference.
Oh, okay.
So in the recreational fishery, they take females as well. We, since, oh my gosh, I think it was right around 1900 that the law was passed in the commercial fishing industry for Dungeness crab, that we harvest only a particular size, 6 3/4, and then only males and no females.
6 3/4 is an interesting, I mean,
I think it's
seven?
Six, yeah. No.
Or six. I mean, you would just think that it would be easier to round it. I mean, round everything else off, right? What? There's something magical about that?
Yeah, there's some scientific basis for that in terms of, maintaining the sustaining fishery, because that's actually one of the things that Dungeness crab is and always has been, is a sustainable fishery. Unlike many other fisheries that... here in California, since its inception and in the early 1900s, it has been a sustainable fishery.
Because there's so many of these things that are out
the combination of things, the way we harvest them in pots, there's so many, they're prolific. And back to your original question of what they eat everything. They're scavengers. They eat everything on the bottom. They'll eat each other if there's a weak one. So they're kind of they clean the bottom of the ocean essentially.
Some species, bigger is tougher, more dominant. Do crabs have any pecking order like that, or is a crab a crab a crab?
I think that what ends up happening in the pecking order of crabs is the large male crabs are in charge. And that's pretty much the way it goes.
So when you pull out a pot, and there's a, let's call it an 11-pounder versus a 7. Is the 11 better? Are the ratios better? Is there any distinction, or is it just more?
Interesting question, because each crab is at a different kind of phase, if you will, of development. And so sometimes they may be less full, more full, depending on where they're at for making a new shell. Because every year, every crab goes through a molt. So they put their energy into making a new shell, and then they molt, and then they're what we call light. And they're not that full of meat, because now they need to put their energy back into hardening up the shell, and then the last thing they do is fill out with meat.
Hermit crabs, are they really crabs?
They sure look like it.
I know. I the concept of shell and growth, okay, I get it. You grow, you got to find a new home. the shell itself, is that just a byproduct of what they eat, or is that... I mean, we think of bones as calcium. Calcium's calcium, right?
It's like the bone. There's a lot of, I believe it's called chitin, I think it is, that It's basically the bones of the crab. It's a skeleton on the outside instead of the inside.
And it has no fertilizing value.
Oh, it actually does.
The shell?
Yeah. And it actually has been used in surgery, too, in terms of making, grinding it and making sutures.
See, sometimes I know the answers. It's 8:30.
Locally owned businesses help our community maintain a distinct personality and to help increase tourism because we don't look like every other place. Small businesses also provide the ability to try on and try out items before you buy and get real expertise, saving you both time and money. When you shop, shop local.
Our award-winning camping department has the gear you need no matter what kind of camping you do. Come in and experience the many benefits of shopping with Pacific Outfitters.
Good morning, KINS, News and Information Times, 8:35. We're back talking shop this morning with Susan Rottwein. Crab is the topic. Talk shop presented by CDH Painting, REDEC, Humboldt Termite Pest Control, and Murphy's Markets. Susan, the concept of crab is one thing. The concept of commercial fishing is something else. We've seen a lot of discussion over the last little bit about set-asides and protected this and restricted numbers of licenses and, you know, the fishing fleet, quote-unquote, that used to be out of Humboldt Bay is just a mere shell of itself. Yeah, in the 60s when I was growing up, I can remember seeing a lot of boats. Mm-hmm. Okay. We only had one of the two docks, so things were certainly different impression-wise for me, but it does seem as if there are less making a living as fishermen today than what there were historically. Is that similar to farming, where we just are seeing consolidation and that's the way the game gets played? Are there more restrictions now, so there's less coming out of the ocean? I mean, we hear that seafood is more and more popular and there's higher demand, so that kind of seems to be at opposite ends. What's that picture look like right now?
Excellent question, Brian. I think that I'm just going to focus in on crab from that question. But I would tell you that in Trinidad, that's the port that we fish out of. If we look back 20 years, there was more than double the fleet that we have today. Today, we have about 18 boats fishing out of Trinidad, well more than 30, 40, 50 boats. There are times that we would see, 70 boats anchored up at any one time.
Yeah, it used to be almost like spring break in Lake Havasu, boat to mm-hmm. boat to boat to boat.
Yep.
You could walk across.
Exactly.
Now, is that just normal attrition? Is that people not wanting the physicalness of the career? Is that government restriction? What has taken it to that point?
I think that there's a few things that have taken it to that point, but the main one here in California is the regulatory process. Over the past, 15 years, the Dungeness crab fleet became what we call limited entry. So there was a line drawn by the California Department of Fish and Game that said, okay, as of this time, there's only going to be so many permits. And so they didn't issue any new permits. So any way to get a permit at this point, you have to buy a permit from an existing permit.
So kind of like an alcohol license.
Yes.
A retail.
Well, if
a resale license.
Yeah, it's along that line, but I don't know if there's actual limitations. In the state of California, the limitation is that there's some 552 permits. Of that, probably early 420 some odd are active. And those are the only permits there are for the state of California. So if you want a permit, you have to buy it from somebody else.
So the other 100 or so, what's an inactive license? Just not being used?
Correct. They still have a license. They maintain the license, but they don't have what we call landings. They don't catch any crab for whatever the reason.
It could be health or whatever.
It could be that it's not lucrative for them to do it anymore, and which is really kind of the point that we're getting to. And if you take this 2019 as an example, the Dungeness crab fishery was shut down because of a lawsuit 3 months early this year. We were shut down on April 15th instead of July 15th. And I can tell you alone in Trinidad, the economic devastation that occurred was probably between $5 and $7 million lost out of our port alone. That doesn't take into account Eureka, Crescent City, or anywhere else on the coast.
Well, and Trinidad's got to be the itty-bitty player in the region, right?
Well,
I mean, is Fort Bragg or
actually, you know, when it comes to landing crab, and you look at, because the other thing I was going to say is that not only are there limited entry permits, the permits that are out there, you can only fish so many pots. That was something that came in fairly recently.
Oh, so it's not how many you can throw on the boat?
No, there's a limit on, and so there's, you know, seven different what we call tiers. So the upper tier is 500, and it goes all the way down to, I believe, 175. So it depends on your permit how many you can fish. And interesting about Trinidad is out of the 500 pot permits or upper tier, the majority of the fleet up there in Trinidad is 500 pot permits.
Oh, now is that historical or is that just kind of because there are more crabs in an area?
Well, the tier of your permit was actually when they put it out was based on your historic landing. So that says that Trinidad lands a lot of crab. In the big scheme of things, Crescent City, Eureka are the bigger ports on the north coast that land more crab. But for our size, we land quite a bit. And the unique
per vessel.
Yeah. And the unique thing about Trinidad is that we're what we call an open ocean port. And so everybody else has to go out across the bar. We row out to our boats, and we go around the corner, and we're on the open ocean.
Game on, yeah.
Game on.
I would think Trinidad would be one of the more appealing because of that. I mean, you don't have the crossing you have to worry about and the protectiveness of the head.
Except from a south-facing storm.
Well, yeah, okay. Yeah, yeah.
And the other thing would be that you can only have a vessel of a certain size. You really can't have anything over 38 feet because we have moorings, train wheels on the bottom of the ocean that attach the boat by chain, and you can't put a large vessel, anything larger than that.
It would just rip it out.
You'd be up on the beach.
Yeah, well, that's not the way to land.
No.
I've been told. Now, the last couple of years of the Obama administration, there were preserves. I was trying to equate it to land, you know, thinking of the wilderness areas, mm-hmm. like in the Marbles.
Mm-hmm.
Okay, and there were a couple of set-asides or whatever the proper
mm-hmm.
proper phrases are, yeah, for these out mm-hmm. Offshore. Now, are those in the crabbing areas or are those other species that get fished?
All of the above. They're in crabbing areas and as well, you know, rockfish, lingcod, you know, other species as well.
So does that pull away or take away of fishable acreage significantly impact? Is it a little impact? How do you see that playing out down the road?
You know, I think that it does limit fishing areas. I think the biggest threat to fishing areas as we move forward is more the wind power that's being proposed for on the ocean. I see that as more of a threat than the existing marine reserve areas.
Because that's going to impact a shadowed area or just in general, there's something you can run into? I mean,
I think that what that will do is further limit areas for fishing. And as well, if you think about the secondary effects for marine mammals, for other species, I think it'll be huge. And there'll be a ripple effect. I think that wind power is a good thing. On land, I think it's good. But anything you put into a marine environment exponentially increases the cost, the maintenance. And I fear that putting wind power out in the ocean is kind of like out of sight, out of mind.
KINS News and Information Time, it's 8:43.
Are you a business owner looking for financial or technical assistance? An entrepreneur looking to start a new business? The Redwood Region Economic Development Commission and the Small Business Development Center want to help. With business loans, classes, and one-on-one consulting, our goal is your success. We've been helping Humboldt County businesses for over 30 years. Visit us at 520 E Street, Eureka, the Prosperity Center, or find us on the web. The Redwood Region Economic Development Commission and Small Business Development Center. We're here for you.
Good morning, KINS News and Information Time is 8:47. We're back talking shop this morning with Susan Rotwein. Susan, a couple of things, kind of crab, sort of, but not necessarily so. Quick quick thing, you've mentioned Dungeness crab specifically. Mm-hmm. Now, are there other crab that are fished off or out of our area that are either related or independent? I mean, that still would be considered Northern California crab?
I think the only other one that I'm aware of is a rock crab, and those are the ones that are smaller and have the big, heavy claws on them. And pretty much that's the meat on them is the claws.
Kind of like those battle robots?
Yeah, exactly.
Yeah. Oh, are they related? I mean, they must be related somehow.
It's somehow they are, yes.
But it's not that close.
No.
Okay. Do they attack each other?
I would think that they would if one was in a compromised position, because
okay.
they're very, they go for anything that's compromised.
But the seasons are different, aren't they?
Yeah, and I'm really not familiar with the season on the rock crab. I know it's quite a bit down south.
Yeah, it seems like it's more of a southern thing. Quick comment about the fish farm, the project out on the North Spit, or the proposed project. There seems to be a lot of different opinions. From the economic development, certainly there's one set of references. There's one set of references from the critter part of it. Number of different areas. What kind of sense do you have about that? It is self-contained, so that kind of makes it something totally different, doesn't it?
I think it does. You know, in general, I think there are some fish farming activities that are sustainable, and I would say that my overall kind of armchair opinion on the economic development piece is I think economic development in our area is critical. I think that the Harbor District has not done the best job of, you know, keeping with their commerce, navigation, and fishing charges. But this being said, I think my overall concern with, even though it is contained, is that if they are going to be using stock that is anything other than Pacific stock, I think that would be an issue. If they're using Atlantic stock out here, even though it is self-contained, it will get away.
Things are different.
Mm-hmm. Exactly.
Yeah. And it'd be interesting to see how that whole project unfolds. I mean, it's certainly there's a soft spot for a lot of us with fishing and of whatever shape or form. Mm-hmm. So
I really think the Harbor District could do a better job working on commerce, developing our harbor. Actually, just the navigable part, keeping it dredged, would be, from a safety standpoint and the fishing community standpoint, top priority.
Thanks for coming by.
Thank you.
See you again. See everybody tomorrow.